WTF. WTF's a big podcast.
Mark, yeah. I had fun doing that.
That's comedian and actor Adam Ferrara talking about his recent interview with Marc Maron.
He's very kind, and it's nice to see someone that I respect. He wrote a book, The Jerusalem Syndrome.
Yes,
and
his first book.
His first book, and I was just in awe of, you know, when you go to the Comedy Cellar, you know, you see these guys that you started with, or not started with, but these guys that you see on TV and the guys you watch, and is just to observe the way they work, and he was so deep. He was so self-aware, which was something I really wanted to.
Very unusual comic.
Yeah, but he was so self-aware, and I was like, that's deep shit. You know, that's kind of, that's not, did you ever notice?
This is pdxpodcast.com. Thanks for tuning in. Today's special guest is actor and comedian Adam Ferrara. FYI, he's going to be starring in a future episode of Criminal Minds. It's television's number one suspense thriller. My name is Gregory Deck. You're listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast at pdxpodcast.com, also northwestpodcast.com, also pdxpod.com. Also, I am the host of The Dish, Thursdays on More Good Day Oregon from 9 to 10. I'll be serving up entertainment news every Thursday, 9 to 10, on KBTV's More Good Day Oregon. Back to Adam. He's a self-admitted confessional comic.
Wow, what a show. What a show.
Oh, thank you. You laughed? Otherwise, this would be awkward, Greg.
Yeah, you really opened up out there. You opened up. You got personal.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the goal for me. I'm a confessional comic, so the more...
You are. You really are.
Yeah, it's you open up. I was Richard Pryor was that when I was a kid. I saw Richard Pryor's Santa Monica concert on a VH.
You talked about that on WTF.
Yeah, I did, and it blew my head. And that's where, and I wasn't really aware that that's what I wanted to be, but I was profoundly moved. So I didn't consciously make a decision to be a comic. I just knew that that affected me. So
profoundly moved.
Yeah, I was a kid. I remember saying out loud. I was alone. I went, look what this man can do.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I ever was that enchanted by someone, and it was the mixture of his emotions. There was just pathos, and I was laughing, but you could see the pain, and there was those two.
The dichotomy, the effect.
It was hypnotizing, and I wanted to know more about him, and I thought he was brilliant, and I, like I said, Greg, I didn't make any decisions like, oh, that's what I want to do. I just knew that affected me, and it was the first time I felt affected as a human being, and I was a kid, so those impressions.
How old were you?
I was 12, maybe.
12 years old. That's when you knew.
I didn't know that I wanted to be a comic. I just knew that had an effect on me.
Oh,
and
I see.
You know, up until then, you know, your world is what your world is. You know, there's disappointment getting cut from Little League. You feel disappointment, but it was the first time you were ever like, wow. And it was a feeling that, I guess it was inspiration. I can't really label it. I just remember being locked in the moment. And that was the first time I ever experienced it.
Again, you really opened up tonight. You talked about ADD. And you were just completely open.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest, Greg. It's tough to fucking hide. I'm bouncing around like a loose power line, so.
Well, I love that. I love that. It made me like you.
Thanks.
As a performer, you really reached out to us tonight, and I really appreciate that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. That's the satisfying thing is I've been in country now for like, God. July 13th, 1988 was my first time on stage. So, what is that?
The 80s.
12 and 17 is what? And I got to do math? Fuck, Greg, you make me do math? 29 years? So, when I feel the connection with the audience, that's the most gratifying thing for me.
You talk about Pryor, but what I got a lot from your performance was Robin Williams.
Yeah, another big...
A lot.
Oh, yeah, a lot. Jonathan Williams as well. Jonathan Winters as well.
Also, yes.
Yeah. When I was a kid...
Very similar type of performer.
Yeah, he had a TV show with that box. He would open up the box and become these different characters. And there was a lot of that free-flowing free-associating energy. And it was, there was styles when I was coming up that you, they were very discernible. There was a San Francisco style, which I really admired. Texas had a great style, Bill Hicks.
Right, yes, Mike, you've Giselka, talked about this before.
Kennison and those outlaws, they had a certain Texas style, which was big. There was, Boston was very, well-read and hard-hitting. In New York, we just had an attitude. But there was places around. Chicago, too, had a discernible. Did you? You felt that, too, right, Greg?
Yeah.
Good. Otherwise, that was in my head, and we don't need that.
Felt it in my soul.
Yeah. But the sub-referencing of stuff, there was a guy named Steve Pearl who was from San Francisco, was sub-reference. So when I was coming
just going
up,
off on tangents, that kind of
thing. And I would listen to the comedy album was a form when I was a kid. It was those were the prized possessions under the
That's
bed.
That's right.
Yeah. So those I would listen a great deal to Pryor and Carlin especially.
That's making a comeback, the comedy album.
Yeah, it's and everything. Well, yeah, everything.
There's a local label called Kill Rock Stars that that publishes them on vinyl now.
Yeah, I wanted to do something like that.
It's big. It's big with the kids.
Yeah.
Big with the children.
You're trendy.
Yeah. And so, but that was how I processed and I learned how my machine worked being a comic because I'm dyslexic as well. I got a lot of fucking problems, Greg. So the spoken word, I process by listening. So when I would listen to the comedy albums, I guess you got your sense of timing and you got your, it just got infused with me. And my dad was very funny as well. My dad was very...
I love it when you talk about your dad.
Yeah.
The voice that you use to mimic your dad and, mm-hmm. and the wisdom. It's...
Yeah, he was an interesting cat. I have my next special. It's already, I didn't do any of it tonight because I was just playing tonight. But there was I got a whole special about my dad dying and the effect it had on me and it was nice because I learned how to. Manipulates is sounds like a negative word, but I learned how to emotionally present different levels of emotion in a show, and I was very, very pleased with that my timing works as well when I want to make an emotional point.
And you did tonight. You did tonight late in the show. You talked about the climate we're in right now, and
yeah.
It really hit very hard because. It just seemed like he was a guy who was opening up about himself personally the whole show, and relating to us as human beings.
Well, that's hopefully that will be our salvation. I mean, that is, I always.
It seemed very personal.
Well, yeah,
it's like you were speaking to a friend.
Yeah, I try to at least be as look. We
very
can't,
honest.
We can't lie up there. That's the and thank you. That's the greatest compliment I can achieve is when I try very hard to be authentic and to be. And to be honest and to be truthful, because the audience can tell.
That's the comedy.
The audience can tell when it's not pure and it's not true. They won't laugh. They don't know why, but you can tell. That's the connection is what I'm going for. And the purer the connection, the deeper the communication is. So what Pryor did for me was I was physically, you know, that gut, your gut communication where you're feeling it. You know, you're not just listening to him, you're feeling it. And this guy was doing it on TV. I was feeling it through the television. So in a live audience, I try to come out in a state of becoming. So it's unfolding with us together. So we're both in the moment together and getting them to trust me. And the way you get people to trust you is to be
open
as honest
up.
As you can. Yeah. To allow you, look, there's no bullshit. I'm not going to turn on you. And it's like, I'm gonna make you laugh, but you're okay. You're safe. You can emotionally let go. And I had to learn that in the first warm them up to emotionally take them to my father stuff and to get to a point where they'll listen to me, where they'll trust me. And you do that by I don't know for everybody, but I can do that by just being as pure as I can and as authentic as I can.
Now, you talked about Portland early on in the show.
Yeah.
I want to hear more about that because
I love
the show
Pacific.
About Portland. Yeah. You love Portland.
I do. I like the Pacific Northwest. I feel very comfortable. I feel very. It's a nice creative vibe. I feel that
very, very.
Yeah, and it's. I enjoy it. It's damp. I'll tell you that. A lot of things are sticky, but it's.
You talked about the Unipiper.
Is,
now,
is,
I've
is
had
that
him
who it
on
was?
My show. Yes.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, I don't know him. I just. Okay.
Yeah, he's a local celebrity. He's been voted the top celebrity here in Portland.
All right.
And there's word of him going to Japan.
Uh-huh.
As
like
a
Cheap Trick.
Right.
Unipiper Live at Budokan?
It could happen. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to talk...
But so is radiation at this point, so I don't know if that's...
Now, on your webpage, I looked at your webpage,
yeah,
and I couldn't believe what I was reading. You've performed for the president and senators.
Yeah.
What's the story with this?
I did... I got invited to the St. Regis Hotel to perform for the Democratic senators, and President Clinton was there. And
was this 90?
This was no. This was it was Obama's first term. Was it Obama? It was Obama's first term.
Okay.
And I got to perform for all the senators at the St. Regis Hotel,
yeah,
and they took pictures, and Clinton, Bill Clinton, shook my hand. And it was like, I would say, and I wasn't doing well at the beginning. They were like, ah, and I went, you know, I'd say this is like playing the Senate, but it is. So I just started chastising them. And then I got them around. I mean, the opening act was a guy that wrote a book about LBJ. Yeah, they were great. It was like most of the riffing, you know, the way I riff on stage, I was doing with them. And they came and Clinton shook my hand and said, God, are you funny? I work with these people. They're a bunch of tight asses. You're funny. And I went, that was great. And I got...
Now you do your performance.
I did. You know who else I did? I did. I did a benefit, a Katrina benefit for Laura Bush. It was John Boehner. Ted Kennedy was alive. I sat next to Ted Kennedy, and it was
wow.
Yeah, it was. I was on a dais. Laura Bush was right here. I'm sitting here. Ted Kennedy comes in, introduces himself. He was at. It was there was a. It was during a. It was a C-SPAN because he was on C-SPAN doing a Supreme Court Justice. They were nominating. I forget which one it was, but he came in and, you know, he's sitting down. Man, it's Ted Kennedy. Hi, I'm the comedian of tonight. He goes, hi, I'm Ted. I go, oh, I know. And he was late, and I went, and how was your day? And he laughed, and
small
he went,
small talk with a senator.
Yeah, small. And he went, and he goes, you know, I ask a lot of questions on C-SPAN because I want these people to know, these judges to know that it's not just policy. These affect people's lives. And
he
I
had that great voice, too.
He did. They affect people's lives. And I said, wow. I said, so, you know, my father's swinging a hammer. He wants to retire. Is everything going to be all right? He goes, get him on the phone. And I called my dad. My dad was alive then. I called my father. And I went, Pop, yeah, hold on. Someone wants to talk to you. And then as I'm handing him the phone, he went, oh, he hates this guy. I'm like, I hope he doesn't say anything. So my
really?
Father got on the phone. Well, he didn't like my father.
Republican?
He was a little, leaned a little right, my dad. So he was on the phone and he said,
because he was a left.
He was left. My dad was a working man, leaned a little right. And my father said, and I heard Kennedy talking to my dad. He went, Pop, I want to thank you for letting Adam come down here and entertain us. We're looking forward to it. I will. Okay, great. If I'm ever up that way, I'll come to your other son's restaurant. Thank you so much. And he talked to him. He handed me the phone. I went, Pop, that was really him. He goes, yeah, that was cool. Is Greenspan there? Am I going to get my fucking Social Security or what?
They're never happy.
Yeah.
So your parents are never happy.
Never
happy.
I played Carnegie satisfied. Hall. I got a standing O at Carnegie Hall for the Toyota Comedy Festival. It was me.
Yeah,
was,
you played some big venues.
Yeah, Dennis, and I got a standing O, and Dennis Leary was hosting the show and brought me out again and said, and I took another bow, and he said, Dennis said, your mom and dad are here. Where are they? And he went, Carnegie Hall, your boy made it. And I put my hands up and they went nuts. And my mother yelled at me when he came back and said, you tell Dennis we don't want the attention on us. Don't do that again. And she yelled at Dennis.
Wow.
Yeah, she couldn't handle it. So
you played some big, big gigs.
Oh, yeah.
Big, big gigs.
I've been very fortunate. I've got to, I played Radio City Music Hall.
Yes.
That's a tough gig because they introduce you and the stage is so big, they stop clapping before you get to the mic. So you got to start talking before
oh,
you
boy.
Get there. I played at Madison Square Garden. I did for a charity benefit. I've been very, very fortunate. And I get to act as well. I get to do drama.
Yeah, Criminal Minds. You have
I fly back, so I start shooting that Monday. So that'll be fun.
It is. You've had a lot of TV work over the years.
Yeah.
And boy, I did a lot of research. I even saw those Olive Garden commercials way back in the day. Quite amazing.
I'll tell you a story about when I got the gig. They offered me the commercial, right? And my dad...
Got a real kick out of that.
Yeah. My dad said to me, I said, Pop, I don't know if I want to do it. A commercial. I don't want to pay. I'm an artist. My father took a long drag off his luck. He goes, you want to be an artist? Go rent a loft and be misunderstood. You need to eat. He goes, it's the Olive Garden. It ain't a real Italian restaurant. No self-respecting Italian restaurant's going to have a window that big so people can drive by and aim.
you interacted with the audience way more than I anticipated, which I think made the show very unique. And I think what makes you a great performer is that I could see you write again and see a completely different show. Yeah, is that part of your improv background?
Yeah,
is
that... that's part of my... There's two reasons I do it. One is because people come back to see
it. Looks like fun.
It's fun.
It looks like fun. You are having fun.
I'm having a lot of fun, and I want to take you guys on this ride. And it's I look for people. If you notice how I did it, was I'll open up with something about the as a way just to show respect to the audience that something about the town we're in. And it's usually the theme of that's usually a stranger in a strange land. Or if I've been back here a couple times, like I have a nice big following in Chicago and Philadelphia, and I'll come back and go, still haven't fixed it, you know, whatever it is. So it's a show of respect that I'm a guest in your house, and I want to realize I've acknowledged something about your city. So I've taken the time to investigate where I am. It's a manners thing with me.
And it's true. Like, even when you have a go at people, you just sort of like at the end, you're like, I'm just kidding around.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Really,
well, you're just playing with people.
Respectful.
Yeah. You want people don't want to be yelled at.
It's a tough climate we're in. It's a sensitive environment.
Yeah. You want the release. Look, my job, and I guess the way I grew up is Richard Pryor, when I saw him, I could do him on the bus, and I would do that material on the bus, and the kids would laugh. And I figured out that's how I can fit in. That's how I can contribute. And it was a self-preservation thing. Well, he makes us laugh. Don't beat him up. You know, so that was it was a dual purpose. And then when I make my dad laugh, that was great because he was under so much pressure. He had three kids. It was all alone. He was in a business just trying to make ends meet and he was all stressed out. And I made him laugh when he came home. I saw it go away.
How'd you do that? How'd you make your dad laugh?
I don't remember. I was just being, you know, just
having
being
a go
me.
At him.
I don't remember anyway. I would do something. Something was on TV, or I would find a
funny voice.
A voice. I would say something. I always had a comment or something that would make him laugh, and I saw it go away. I saw the face. I saw the stress go away. And my father had a laugh.
That's what laughter does for us.
And he was a big guy. My dad was a physically imposing man.
Really?
Oh yeah. And when he laughed, it filled up a room. And he had that gravitas about. Even in the neighborhood growing up, it was a different time. It was a real sense of community, the little neighborhood I grew up in, because everyone knew each other. You know, my aunt ran a deli. We knew the guy at the corner. My father would send me up to get his cigarettes, and the guy knew it was for my father. So, but everyone knew each other. I had to get on a train and go to another city to buy condoms and beer because everyone knew each other in my neighborhood.
Oh, my God.
I had to go to another town. So that sense of community in the neighborhood, everyone would come and see my dad. He would sit in his office. And at the end of the day, I remember vividly sitting on the floor in his office playing with a pipe wrench and a half-inch copper pipe cutter and just cutting pipe. Yeah. And these people would bring him coffee, and he'd light up a Lucky and look at him and go, Greg, what's the matter? And people would pour their hearts out to him. And he would let them talk, and he would go, listen, here's what I would do. And he would just give them direction and encourage them to take action.
You know, did you ever see Manchester by the Sea?
I'll break down.
Well, there's
I will break down.
Well, there's a scene where Casey Affleck is fixing a pipe near the end of the film. And, you know, everybody knows each other. And they know his last name. Yeah. They know his history. And this guy's just pouring his heart out about his dad.
Yeah.
To him as he's fixing his pipes. And, you know, it's sort of a lost thing, you know.
Yeah, if that... that sense of connection is something, and I got that.
You will lose it if you see that film.
I know. I can't. I just hear I read the reviews, and I think I was reading Anne Hornaday in the Washington Post, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to see this. I can't. Shit. Bambi gets me. When Bambi's mom goes, I can't take this.
I do want to ask you one question about Top Gear. Mm. I saw an episode with you in Minnesota.
Ice driving.
And you were shaking. You were
it's freezing.
In real trouble after the... You were in the car for about 15 minutes, lighting a fire.
Oh, yeah.
What happened to you physically? Because, like, the next... They cut it. They edited it, and you were fine afterwards, but you were shaking.
Oh, they put us in a freezer.
Really bad, yes. But look really bad after.
It was fucking cold, Greg. I was in a freezer. We were all shaking. So I lit a fire in the car to stay warm.
Right.
Yeah, it was cold, so...
But, I mean, afterwards, it looked like you were in serious trouble.
I was, yeah. That's just one time. I jumped a caddy 40 feet in the air. I got a
third episode.
I jumped a Cadillac 40 feet in the air. I rolled a truck. We were all banged up. I got a third degree AC separation. Tanner wrenched his neck in a GTR coming down a ski slope. Rutt went ass over tea kettle and endoed three times in a in an ultralight race in Arizona. Lunchtime for us is like a sandwich and a handful of Advil.
WTF. WTF is a big, big podcast.
Mark, yeah. I had fun doing that.
It sounded like you had fun. It sounded like two old buddies.
That's what it was. I know Mark well as anybody could know Mark. But I met him as and I was always
he was trying to impress you, it sounded like.
And he was. I mean, he was ahead of me as a
lot of respect for you.
Yeah, he's very kind, and it's nice to see someone that I respect. He wrote a book, The Jerusalem Syndrome.
Yes, and
His first book, and I was just in awe of, you know, when you go to the Comedy Cellar, you know, you see these guys that you started with, or not started with, but these guys that you see on TV and the guys you watch, and is just to observe the way they work, and he was so deep. He was so self-aware, which was something I really wanted to.
Yeah, very unusual comic.
Yeah, but he was so self-aware, and I was like, that's deep shit. You know, that's kind of that's not did you ever notice? You know, he's working something out, and it was very attractive to me to have that kind of knowledge.
I got that sense from you from listening to that.
Yeah, he was one of the guys.
Now, I also want to ask you, how did you get to Portland? Did you drive? Did you?
No, I flew in last night.
You know. Okay, you get recognized in airports.
Yeah, it's very nice when people see you, and it's very nice when people could connect. I'm with you, and the biggest, I'm at the car show tomorrow. I'm making an appearance at the Portland car show.
Oh, great.
And that's my favorite thing is to see the kids' faces. They come in, they print out stuff from the internet. Like, they'll print out the car flying in the air, the caddy, and I sign the caddy flying in the air. They print out the flying Mustang, the one you saw me push off the cliff, and they print out the pictures, and I sign it to them. And sometimes I'll get emails like, my son's a big fan, and they're not old enough to come into the club. So I'll come early. I said, all right, come to the early. I'll be in a parking lot. And I just come to the parking lot, and I just take pictures with the kids. And you always see the parents' faces. They mouth, thank you. You know, you see these big faces on the kids. And they talk about that for weeks, you know. And it's like it just makes their day.
Yeah, isn't it? Does it blow your mind, like being a TV star? I mean.
Yes.
You know.
Absolutely. It's still, you know, it's still when you see the faces light up. You're like, oh, shit, I can do that. That's great.
Yeah. Do people ask you, like, strange questions
on
the planes?
Car questions, yeah.
I mean, like inappropriate questions because...
you get any kind of... When people think they know you, it's more like I got friends that are
so how's your sex life? How much money do you make?
Yeah, no. They think they know you when you're on TV. So there's a whole relationship that they're having with you that you're just like, hey,
it doesn't
dude,
exist.
Hi, you know.
Yeah.
But for the most part, people are pretty respectful, and you know.
Well, that's great to hear.
Yeah,
that really is great to hear.
Yeah, it's
you come across as very approachable.
Yeah, they're nice people, and especially when there's so many choices for entertainment.
Yeah.
So when people
you talked about that tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, because there is. It was different. There's very little shared experience anymore, which is, you know, like you can't.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, there was everyone knew what went on TV. You know, the General Lee flew through the air, and everyone was talking about it the next day. You know, when
it was a more shared experience. NBC, yeah. CBS.
Yeah, there was a more shared experience. There was, you know, Pink Floyd, The Wall came out, and we don't need no education. You know, everyone knew.
Everybody knew. Everybody.
Yeah. And now there's not
the Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, there's not a lot of that anymore. So to have someone that comes back and sees you again, and it's like do this thing Facebook Live on. It started because I would live tweet during Top Gear, so you get a relation. People come back every week. They watch the show, and I would take pictures as we
shot
them.
Such a fun show, by the way.
Yeah, I would take pictures as we shot them behind the scenes, and when we went into commercial, I'd show you a behind the scenes picture and tweet stuff out, and we'd start a conversation. So when the show. Our contract didn't get renewed, I had all these people asking me, so I just went on Facebook Live and started talking to these people. And now every Tuesday,
I've seen those, yes.
Yeah, now every Tuesday, it's basically my wife holding the camera, going, "Don't say that, you idiot." And it's these people come back every week. I got a guy making me a guitar. This guy Daniel, who's a guitar maker, he's making me this gorgeous guitar. He's sending me pictures of it. It's an electric guitar. It's beautiful. He asked me what paint job I wanted. It's the Gulf livery from the GT40. It's going to be that pale blue and that Ford orange. It's going to be great. And it's just another artist. It's someone wanting to do that, and to have people that want to do that for you is it's a little like you have to accept it. You have to allow the energy to come in, because even though if you push it away, there's no communication. You know, like the laughter, I have to allow that when people really are moved by what you do, I'm very appreciative, and I had to accept that. I had a hard time accepting that.
You had a hard time accepting it.
Accepting the energy coming back at me.
Really?
Yeah, I did. Because I felt I didn't deserve it. I felt like, it's nothing. You know, it's like I felt like...
Where's that come from?
It's probably some kind of insecurity, I guess.
Really?
How am I going to live up to this? And then I realized it's not my moment. It's their moment. So I just got to be present and alert and allow that energy to come in. Certain people, performers, they let you love them. Muhammad Ali had it. David Bowie had it. They let you, they could take that energy in, all that energy.
That is very true.
Yeah. Will Smith, I think, has that quality. It's not natural to me. I push it away, the spotlight. It's something I had to learn how to do, and I'm still struggling with it.
I think the spotlight is a bit overrated, to be honest.
Oh, God, give me the money. I'd rather have the money. When I was younger, I wanted fame because I wanted to get girls. I got the girl I want. Now I just want the money to take care of her. Yeah. I don't want to be any more. I got a nice level of I figured out that I had to know what a definition of success is. So then I'd know I'd have it, so I would feel satisfied. So I came up with success is getting the opportunity to do it again. You know, when you're acting and you're on a TV series, I'm very comfortable there, being part of a whole, being in a sense of community, and you never know when you're going to work again. It's the uncertainty of my job. So when I got another TV, I said, thank you. This is success. And I got another show. Thank you. This is success for me. And it keeps me realizing that, oh, okay, I'm doing okay. You know, I get to come back to clubs and do this stuff.
I love
get to work as an artist.
Sort of a working class work ethic.
Yeah.
That you're bringing to a very high level. I know you're going on stage again.
Yeah. Well, that's
thank
what
you.
Also, yeah, that's a good observation. I still have that. Thank you for it. I'm going to put
you
that in a
what?
Notebook.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today. So
good to see you, Greg.
Yes, fantastic.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Helium Comedy Club, for allowing me to accost Adam in the green room. We shuffled things around and got some microphones in there. And it was awkward, and I seem to work very well with awkward, because I am. And I really appreciate it. And thank you for listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast for this week. We'll be back next Monday. See you then.